fingers were swelling too, and the red lines were darker and nearer purple. I knew this was an infection from the pike bite, so I decided to give her an amoxicillin, which is an antibiotic, and then made sure she had plenty of water and she was warm. I had to shake her awake, and she opened her eyes and stared at me, all glassy, like she was drunk. She was all wet with sweat, but she felt cold and clammy. I put her purple jumper on her, and she just let me. And then I sat her up, and I made her swallow the antibiotic pill. Then I wrapped her up, all warm again, and sat next to her. She opened her eyes again and said, "Sal, I'm ill." I said, "I know, but you'll be all right. You've got an infection from the pike bite, and I've given you an amoxicillin." And she smiled and said, "Good." And then she went back to sleep. It was colder that morning, and the sun was out, but there was a bit of frost on the leaves and twigs around our camp. The pike was all blackened with smoke and was dripping little lines of white liquid onto the fire that hissed. The skin was getting crispy, and you could see the white flesh underneath. I boiled the kettle and made tea for us both with the last milk we had and sugar. Peppa didn't want tea, but she drank a bit more water, and then started pulling all the blankets off her and jerking about, and I mopped her head again because she was burning up. Then she stopped and flopped down asleep again, and I covered her. I sat by her for hours then. I only got up to feed the fire and once to go and have a pee. I wanted a phone or a tablet so I could find out about infection from pike bites and if there was some kind of bacteria she had got and how I could kill it. The amoxicillin packet said to take 1-2 times a day, and I had 3 left. There was no way of getting a phone or a tablet, and the only way I could get online was to go to the library again, and that was too far, and I couldn't leave Peppa on her own. She woke after a couple of hours and wanted water, and she seemed more awake and said she was hungry, so I gave her corned beef and beans. I boiled the kettle and made her pine needle tea from the long needles off Scots pine because it's got vitamin C in it. She liked it because I put sugar with it. I undid the bandage again and it had swelled up more and the red lines were still there and there was more pus. I cleaned it all up and she screamed again when I put on the iodine. She wasn't as hot, but she said she was tired and she went back to sleep. I sat and thought about what to do. I had tried to plan for something like this by bringing the antibiotics, but I didn't get enough, and I didn't know if the 4 I had would work. I couldn't plan for the pike bite, but I knew it was that was making her ill. I always looked after Peppa when she was ill, and I used to give her Calpol when she was a baby if she was teething or getting hot, and I was only about 4, but Ma couldn't do that stuff with her, or me. Sometimes because she was drunk, and sometimes because she panicked and started crying if we were ill or if we hurt ourselves, and then she got drunk and went to sleep. When she got the letter that I was going in the Vulnerable Learners Unit at school, she panicked because she said they were saying I was retarded. I got put in it after P7 because I couldn't write properly, letters and words. I could read fine, but when I wrote, it looked like I was retarded. It didn't matter what I was thinking. When I wrote the words, they came out different and spelled all wrong and looked like another language. Sometimes I could write something and then 5 minutes later, even I couldn't understand what I'd written and neither could anybody else. It was better if I typed, but even then, sometimes I spelled words like I was pissed. Peppa had good writing and she could spell everything. I saw 2 reports they sent about me. One said I was above average intelligence but suffering from severe dyslexia and an inability to recognise phonemic clusters and patterns. The other said I was of high intelligence and had an advanced reading age, but I suffered from severe cognitive impairment when it came to writing and remembering the spelling of words. It said I would need learning support and a scribe and exams. I think I can't write properly, and I am very dyslexic because I'm left-handed. And statistically, if you're a girl and you're left-handed, you're much more likely to be dyslexic. Probably because your brain works the wrong way round from other people. I also got put in the unit because I never smiled and stared at people, and other kids called me weird and they were worried I'd get bullied in the main school, which was big and had about 2,500 kids in it. The report said I was withdrawn, appeared socially isolated and seemed reluctant to form new friendships. Which was true. I was like that. I still am. I didn't have any friends in school, and Peppa was still at primary. I stopped being friends with Mary when I was about 10, and she started going round with two other girls who thought I was weird and didn't live near us. Ma never went to the meetings at school about me, and she gave the letters they sent to me to read. Most of the other kids in the unit were headcases who hit teachers and threw things across classrooms. And there were also the Bloy twins, who were two fat girls from a big family called the Bloys, who were all headbangers and druggies and in gangs. The twins were a year older than me, and they never spoke either, but they battered kids all over the school, and when they walked down the corridors, everyone got out of their way. They both wore the same clothes and gold chains and shell suits and Nikes. But they never bothered me, and neither did any of the kids at school, because I was tall and I stared, and other kids thought I was hard. And I am hard. I've never had a proper fight, but I'm not scared of anybody. The only lessons I went to with normal kids were maths and geography, because I liked them. The other kids in the class just sat on their phones all the lesson, but I did the worksheets and read about glaciation and third world poverty and climate change. Most kids are on their phones all the time because they can Snapchat and Instagram each other and look at porn. The internet is mostly for porn and sending pictures, but there is a lot of good stuff with information and finding out about history and YouTube videos for when you need to know how to do things or fix things. Most things I need to know are on YouTube, and there are documentaries too about history, and I know a lot of stuff from it. And you can also buy things online, which is what I did. There was one boy in the unit I liked and sometimes had a laugh with. He was called Davy Mack, and he was little and had pointy ears like a pixie, and he smelled of fags and bubblegum. The only time I ever got a row in school was when he nicked a wheelchair from the disabled unit and pushed me all around the school corridors going really fast and screaming and shouting swear words. I liked it, and it made me laugh, flying along in the chair with wee Davy pushing me. We got caught by Mr. Connor, the deputy rector, and Davy got excluded for 2 weeks, and I got confined to the unit and wasn't allowed to go to maths and geography for a while. The teacher in the unit was called Mrs. Finlayson, and she was quite old and little, and she was nice, and she sometimes looked into my eyes smiling. And once she said, "There's a lot going on in there, isn't there, Sal?" Once a week we sat on the sofas in the quiet room, and I had to tell her about my feelings. I couldn't tell her anything about the flat, or Ma, or Robert, so I used to say I felt fine, and I was happy. And sometimes I made up things I was worried about because she seemed to want me to feel worried about something. I once told her I was worried about climate change, and I am a bit, because we are right on the Firth of the coast, and if global warming makes sea levels rise by a metre, then the shore road and Ian Leckie's house and the wee shops by the wall would all get flooded. Our flats are on a hill, up from town, so we'd be all right. Mrs. Finlayson nodded and said, "Well, it's something that we all need to think about." I told her about people I loved, Peppa and Ma and Ian Leckie, and I never told her anything about Robert, or even said his name to her. Peppa woke up again when it started to get dark, and I gave her another amoxicillin and made her more pine needle tea. She sat up in the bed and said her arm was sore, and I did the bandage again, but I only had one bandage left, so I reused the one I took off. There was still pus, and it was still red and swollen up, and the cut seemed to be wider. She said it was really sore, and it felt heavy, and it throbbed. I gave her cake and nuts and raisins to eat, because she said she didn't want to eat the pike. I ate a bit of it, and the meat was white and tasted of smoke, and it had a lot of bones in it. I gave Peppa a head torch, and she read her book a bit, and I got a head torch and went off into the woods to get more sticks and wood for the fire and to fill the kettle at the burn. When I got back, Peppa said she needed the toilet, and I took her outside, and she had diarrhoea, which sometimes happens when you take antibiotics, so I knew I'd have to make sure she had fluids and salt and sugar. I had to clean it up with the grass, and I also used the vest soaked in boiled water. But it was getting cold, so I got her back into bed and wrapped up. Her arm was still sore and swollen up, and I gave her another ibuprofen and codeine. I sat and worried while she went back to sleep. I got the fire all stacked up with wood and sat watching it from the entrance of the bender for a long time. I kept the water hot and woke Peppa every 2 hours so she could have pine needle tea with a bit of salt and sugar in it. It got really cold. The sky was clear and there was a bright three-quarter moon that made everything silver and grey in the woods, and I watched frost form and sparkle on the leaves and twigs on the ground. I stayed warm by the fire and Peppa stayed in the bed. Her temperature was down and she wasn't kicking and jerking in her sleep, so that was good. But we had a bad night. I didn't really sleep. I just sat watching the fire and checking on Peppa, and I got one blanket and wrapped it around me. In the night, I heard the owl shriek and I heard rustling and moving in the trees towards the burn, which I thought might be deer. The pike over the fire was getting all shriveled and was black. It looked like a bin bag hanging on paracord. Far off, I heard a fox bark, which is not really like a bark. It's like someone with a husky voice shouting, "Ach!" I'm not scared of the dark or being outside at night. I like it. I needed to just sit and watch the fire to make me feel more calm about Peppa. I was thinking about what to do if she stayed poorly. I could go into the town and get a doctor, but that would be it, and we'd be found out and I'd get arrested. I could go into the town and try and get more antibiotics and bandages and look up stuff on YouTube and websites about infections. But either way, I'd have to leave Peppa. I also knew I'd have to go and snare something, or catch more fish, or shoot birds, or our food would run out again. I went into another kind of dream, staring at the fire, and saw the little lights, and felt the tapping feeling at the base of my neck, and I couldn't feel my body again, and felt like I was peering out of a big black space at the fire, and I stayed like that for ages. The sun started to come up, and the sky in the east through the trees got a little thin stripe of gold along the horizon, and then it went bright pink, and then silver, and the frost sparkled all around the wood. Then I heard rustling, and feet stamping along from above us. Twigs were cracking, and I felt my heart starting to race. She appeared from round the back of the bender, and she peered in under the umbrella at me, sitting by the fire, and said, "Guten Morgen, Kinder." She did look like a witch, and she had a big tartan shawl wrapped round her head like an African woman, and her coat was long and black. She had scarves and bits of bright silk round her neck, and she was wearing sheepskin gloves and carrying a walking stick. Just below her eye, the scar was like a wee bit of white spaghetti stuck to her cheek. She smiled, and she had big white teeth, and her lips were red with lipstick. I said, "Is it true you're a doctor?" "Peppa's ill. She got bitten by a pike, and it's got infected, and she's had a fever and diarrhea." She looked into the bender and went, "Ach so, the little girl with red hair. And you are the sister?" I said, "Aye." And then she said, "I am a doctor. I'm an immunologist and I specialise in diseases of the immune system. I was trained in the German Democratic Republic, the DDR. Do you know this?" I said, "Can you make her better?" And she said, "Yes." She went into the bender and crouched down next to Peppa, who started to wake up, and when she saw Ingrid, said, "Hello, Ingrid. I got bit by a pike." Ingrid smiled and pulled off her gloves and stroked Peppa's head and said, "I'm going to treat you." Ingrid's hands were big and she had long nails with red polish on them and her hands were really clean too. She turned to me and said, "Tell me about the treatment so far, please." And I told her about washing the cuts and the amoxicillin and the painkillers and making Peppa drink a lot of the pine needle tea. I told her the cuts kept oozing and bleeding, and about the red lines up Peppa's arms. And she listened and kept going, "Gut, gut, gut." And then she said, "Excellent, you are a very intelligent young person." Then she said, "Boil water, please, and please hand me the headlight." And she started undoing the bandage with her big hands and put on the head torch over her big tartan thing and switched it on. I got the kettle going again and poured her a cup of hot, almost boiling water. She got it and emptied it over her hand and rubbed them together. It must have burned, but she didn't look bothered. Then she shook her hands till they were nearly dry and there was steam coming off them. She opened up the bandage and looked at all the cuts and at all the swelling. She ran her finger along one cut and Peppa went, "Ow!" And then she pressed on the swollen bit, and then she sniffed the cut. Then she looked into Peppa's eyes very hard with the lamp. Then she felt all around the back of Peppa's head, and then under her neck and chin. Then she said, "Put the arms up," to Peppa, and Peppa held her arms up like a diver. Ingrid felt all in her armpits. Then she pulled back the sleeping bag and blanket and felt all down and around the tops of Peppa's legs and around her belly. While she was doing this, I was watching, and Peppa looked at me and grinned and held her eyes wide open and mouthed, "Leza," and pointed at Ingrid, and I laughed. Ingrid made Peppa lie back down and covered her, but kept her left arm out of the covers. Then she turned around and said, "The wound is getting further infected from the foreign bodies that are still in it, which is why she's not begun to heal or form a scab and is still creating pus. It is also why she felt feverish, as her immune system is starting to react as if she has sepsis. The red track marks her immune responses to the foreign infection source." I said, "I cleaned it all with iodine." Ingrid said, "If there was further infection sources in the wound itself, it would have made no difference. So, do you know what sphagnum moss is?" I nodded, and Ingrid told me to go and get a big armful of it and wash any dirt or leaves off it in the burn. I ran down to a flat bit just along the burn where the trees are thinner and there is a thick bed of moss growing alongside the water. I peeled a big slab of it up and it cracked where there was frost on the top. It was heavy and drippy and I squeezed it to get it drier, then I washed it in the fast bit of the burn. My hands were icy and red while I washed it and I squeezed the water out and made sure there was no bits or twigs or dirt. Then I ran back and Ingrid was by the fire and she had a little zipper case in front of her. She was holding long tweezers in the flame of the fire. She let the ends glow red and then she laid them on a rock. When she saw the moss, she said, "Good," and then said, "Do you have a cord?" I got her the roll of paracord and she took off a scarf from around her neck that was off-white and looked like silk. She spread it out on the rock and then put all the moss into the middle of it and then tied the corners into a kind of bag. She got out a folding knife and cut a length of paracord and then tied up the bag round the knot and made a loop in the top. Then she hung the bag over the fire from the umbrella and then put the kettle under it, sitting so the spout was under the bag. The kettle soon started boiling and the steam was pumping out and up into the bag of moss. Ingrid hung the tweezers off the paracord bit so they were in the steam too. "Make sterile," she said. I sat on a rock on the other side of the fire and watched the steam billowing around the bag of moss. I said, "What's in her cut?" She said, "If I guess, I will say teeth." "Teeth?" "Pike teeth. They are quite fragile and thin, and they snap off in prey. I have treated a pike bite before, many years ago, on a fisherman in Germany." "Do you have a mother?" I said, "Aye." But I didn't want to tell her anything about us. She was looking at me and smiled again. "You're very tall and very beautiful," she said. "Is your mother here?" I said, "No, we're on our own. I'll look after Peppa. We've been hunting and snaring rabbits and fishing for food." Ingrid smiled again. When she smiled, her eyes went thin and even more Chinese, and all around her eyes wrinkled up into little ridges. Her skin looked like it was all covered in tiny little cuts, and it was the same colour as her silk scarf. She wore really red lipstick, and she had dark eyeshadow and mascara. She said, "I live in a bender. Mine is bigger than this. I also have a drying rack for wood and a food store." "Where is it?" I said. "About 5 kilometres over." She pointed north towards Magna Bra, on the other side of the stones, and a little valley with a stream. "How long have you lived here?" "I have been here for 4 years, and before I was further down my valley, nearer to the town and the main road. But I don't like to see people too much. Then I wanted to tell her about us and Robert and the police and the social after us, and see if she said she'd tell. But Peppa shouted, 'Annie da wee,' from the bender, and I went and got her and walked her over to the latrine. When we got back, Ingrid asked if we had soap, and I got it from the backpack and she poured a tiny bit of boiling water onto her hands and then washed them with the soap and kept rubbing and rubbing and holding them over the steam. Then she shook them again in the heat of the fire. She said, "Please can you give two of the painkillers now? And Peppa, sit on the bed." I got two ibuprofen and codeine and gave them to Peppa, who swallowed them and made a face. She sat on the bed with her arm out on her lap. Ingrid took the bag of moss and opened it, and it was steaming, and she got the tweezers and wiped them on the silk. Wearing the head torch, she knelt in front of Peppa and said, "So, this will sting you." And I held Peppa's other hand. First, Ingrid squeezed some of the moss a bit drier and then laid it all over the cuts. It was still steaming, and Peppa just said, "Hot." But she didn't flinch. Ingrid made sure it was all over the cuts, and then she said, "We wait." We sat there, and then Peppa said, "You can't tell anyone we're here, Ingrid." Ingrid said, "Who's looking for you?" I said, "Peppa, don't say." But Peppa said, "The police and social workers. We ran away. If they catch us, they'll split us up, and Sal will get put in jail." Ingrid sat back. She closed her eyes and said, "I will never inform on anyone. When I was young, I lived in DDR, and there were informants everywhere who told the authorities everything they wanted to know about you. I had very good friends. I thought good friends, who told the government about things I said, or people I had been with, or places I wanted to go. And my life was made very bad for a time. One informer was a man who I loved. I do not trust anyone who informs Peppa." Peppa said, "What's DDR?" I said, "Is it in Germany?" Ingrid opened her eyes and held her fingers up. She leant forward and pulled all the moss off Peppa's hand and wrist. She threw it back out of the door of the bender. The cuts were really clean, with no pus or blood, and the edges were white. Peppa's skin looked whiter where the moss had been. Ingrid bent forwards with the tweezers and put the torchlight onto the cuts and said, "Hold." And I held Peppa's hand and she squeezed her eyes shut. And so did I. I felt Peppa flinch once and Ingrid go, "Ach so, gut, einer, ach so, und noch einer, so." I opened my eyes and so did Peppa and Ingrid said, "Good, look." And she held out her hand with a light on it, and there were three little triangle shapes that looked like they were made of plastic. They had sharp edges on two sides and a thicker edge on the other. I said, "Are they pike teeth?" And Ingrid said, "They are. And now they are out, so the infection will go." Peppa looked at them for ages and then said, "What a bastard he was." Ingrid laid more moss on the wound and then bandaged it. She made Peppa wriggle her fingers and then she put her hand on Peppa's head and said, "Now you will be okay, pretty girl." I knew that I liked Ingrid then, and I thought I could maybe even tell her about killing Robert. I made tea and I got the cake out and we had Belvitas and nuts and raisins. Ingrid asked about how much food we had and if we filtered the water. I told her we boiled it and we had corned beef and some beans and Belvitas and cake and some raisins and nuts and a bit of bread. I said I was going to check the snares and she said, "Rabbit is good meat. But now I go. I will go to the stones and then to my bender. I will return tomorrow. You must give the last two antibiotics now, and Peppa, rest and drink fluids." She stood and pulled on her gloves and got her stick. Peppa said, "Thank you, Ingrid. You're nice. Will you teach me to speak German tomorrow?" And I said, "Yes, you are nice." Ingrid smiled at us both and said, "And you are both nice. And tomorrow I will teach you German and bring you some dried mushrooms." And then she went striding off into the woods. Peppa rested and slept, and I went out and checked the snares, and we got a rabbit, and I felt brilliant that Peppa was going to be better, and we had a rabbit for our tea. It was sunny and cold on the big slope down to the loch, and I thought about Ingrid, and thought it was good for us that we had met her, because she wouldn't tell, and she was a doctor. I wanted to know about the DDR too, so I was going to ask her a lot of questions when she came back. Chapter 9. Mushrooms. The next day, Peppa was better, and she got up and went running around the forest for an hour in the morning. I changed the bandage on her arm the night before, and the swelling was going down, and I put more moss on and bandaged it up again. When Peppa got back, she went to the burn and washed her socks and knickers, and I washed the bandages. Then we boiled the kettle and we both washed again with soap and a wet t-shirt for a flannel. It was still cold, but I got the fire going well, and even knew it was okay by the fire, and Peppa went on about pubes again. We hung all the washing over the umbrella to dry, and then I went out with the air gun over the warrens and sat still by the rocks and watched for rabbits. Peppa stayed in the bender reading Kidnapped, which she said was slow and had a lot of old-fashioned words in it, but it was about a boy whose uncle was trying to kill him for an inheritance, so far as she had got. And the old man uncle only ate porridge, and he called it parritch. I stayed as still as I could, and the wind was coming northeast, but only a little breeze along the loch, and my scent would be away from the rabbits. I pumped the gun 8 times and put a pellet in and lined up the sight on some ferns next to where I could see a run, and waited. The ground under my bum was damp and cold. I leant against the rock with the gun propped along it. In front of me, I could see the bracken and grassy slope with the trees behind. The sun was out, but it was cold, and my hands started to feel smooth, like they do in cold wind. I sat and watched the grass and ferns where the warrens were. Nothing moved, apart from the ferns waving in the breeze. Further down, 3 crows were flying around and around at the edge where the trees started. At the bottom, the loch glinted in the sun. Above me, the slope ran up and there were more trees, big Scots pines and larch, and above them you could see the top of the rocky ridge, and over that was the moor and Magna Bra. It was nice knowing where I was, and knowing Peppa was in the shelter reading. I heard the rumble of a car before I saw it. Then 2 4x4s came along the edge of the loch on our side. One was a Green Rangers truck and the other was Polis with an orange and yellow strip down the side. They were going slow driving along the loch shore where it was flat and stony. I froze and watched, pulling back from the edge of the rock so I could just see them with one eye peeping round. I breathed slow and knew not to make any sudden emotional decision but to stop and pause and assess the situation. The 2 trucks came slowly along, almost to the beach where Peppa and I fished, and stopped. The Polis one pulled up onto the bank and 2 coppers got out. A ranger in a dark green shirt got out of the other truck and they walked up the slope a bit and stopped. The ranger was pointing and the coppers were both looking at phones. I could see 1 copper showing the ranger a phone and then he pointed the other way over towards the far side of the loch and they turned and looked across. I turned round really slowly to see if there was any smoke coming up out of our woods from our fire. There wasn't, and I knew most of it was being blown away off into the woods behind us in the breeze, and there wouldn't be much anyway, because we had really dry wood. I turned back slow and got by the edge of the rock and watched again. They were all standing by the Polis car now and talking, and one was still looking at his phone. I waited and watched and breathed slow. Then the 2 coppers got back in their truck, and the ranger got in his, and they started again, going along the loch towards the end. I waited till they were out of my sight, and I couldn't hear the rumble of their engines. I guessed they would go to the far side, and then try to get up the bank alongside the other burn, and up towards the plantations, and the forestry road we used. If they were looking for us, they weren't looking very hard, I thought. They didn't drive up towards our woods. Maybe they weren't looking for us. But 2 coppers and a ranger. And they had the CCTV from the station, and maybe even from on the train, so they'd know which direction we went in. I got up and crept back along and into the trees, and then ran all the way back to our bender. Ingrid was there when I got back, and she brought a Tupperware box full of dried mushrooms, and another with butter in it, and bread in a frying pan. Peppa said, "Did you get a rabbit, Sal?" I said, "No." And then I said, "There's coppers down by the loch with a ranger and 4x4s. Peppa said, "Shit, shit, shit, shit." Ingrid said, "They look for you." "I don't know, but why would they be up here?" "Maybe they find a crime here," Ingrid said. Peppa said, "Did they see you?" "No. They went along the loch all the way up to the end. They stopped at our fishing place and got out and looked about." Peppa said, "We should move, Sal. Go further up. Go further into the woods at the top." Ingrid said, "Come to my camp. I'm a long way from here. And it's a little valley. I see nobody. I can make a bender for you. You bring your tarp. I needed to think, so I wandered off into the wood for a bit. If they had come this near, they might come further. They might even try to make it up the other side of our wood, and then if they came in, they might find trails we'd left. I went back and Ingrid was frying the mushrooms in butter, and they smelled lovely. She got a tin of our corned beef and broke it all up into the pan with the mushrooms and fried it all. Peppa said, "Let's go to Ingrid's bit, Sal. It's further away and there's nobody there. We can make a new bender." "And you can get wood for me," Ingrid said. "I am old and my back hurts sometimes." I said, "Don't you want to be on your own?" Ingrid said, "No, I am on my own for many, many years. I would like to have two girls there." We ate the corned beef and mushrooms out of the pan and it was really nice, and Peppa danced about going, "Nice food, Ingrid!" Ingrid didn't want to know why the police were after us, or why we didn't want to see anyone else. I think that was why I decided we should go and stay at her bender. Maybe only for a bit, and then come back this way. I could snare and hunt over there for all of us. I said, "Is there a lock for fishing by you?" She said, "Away up, above me and over, it is about 2 kilometres from my camp. A small lock. It is called the Lock of Dudgeon. There is also a river at the bottom of my valley, and I have a burn just next to me for water." "What if we get seen going there? Over the moor in Magna Bra?" "You have head torches. We go at night." I thought about it again, and Peppa said, "Let's go, Sal. We can go tonight." I said, "It's a long way, Peppa, and we have to carry all the stuff." She said, "I know." I got my map out of the rucksack and worked out where Ingrid was. It was still far from houses or tracks, but only about 2 miles from a main road. There were no tracks or footpaths marked leading to the little valley from the road, and it all looked like dense woods between her and the road. I showed her the map and she showed me whereabouts she was. The lock was at the top of her valley and the high ground where it rose up and led to Magna Bra one way and then onto the moor and a chain of small locks on the other. I said, "Can we get food there?" Ingrid said, "I have food. Much food. I go to the town once a month. I walk and get rice and flour and butter and jam. I can make bread. I have a stone bread oven." Peppa said, "Jam, Sal." So I said okay, and Ingrid said we should go once it got dark, but we needed to pack up and clear all the bender and not leave any traces that we'd been there. So Peppa and I packed everything in the rucksack, and I pulled all the branches off the bender and got the tarp down and pulled the umbrella apart and hid all the branches off in the wood. We hid all the spruce in the bushes and pulled all the poles down from the bender. I zipped all our wet stuff into a pocket in the rucksack and we buried all the rubbish, like cans and plastic bags. Peppa packed her stuff into the backpack and took her books and the pile of rabbit fur she tried to make a hat out of. We sat round the fire until it started to get dark, and I left the solar charger out in a patch of sun by the burn to charge the batteries for the head torches. There wasn't any moon, and after it got dark, we put the fire out with dirt and then kicked the ashes all over to hide where it was. There was nothing left of our camp when we started off up through the woods along the burn, only some bent twigs and flattened bits of grass. Ingrid went in front with a head torch, and Peppa went in the middle with the other one, and I came behind and followed Peppa's light. Ingrid walked quite slow, and she jigged up and down when she walked, and she chatted to herself in German. It was slow and hard going up through our woods, and then we had to climb the big slope up to the moor at the top. Ingrid just kept going slow. Sometimes she looked back at us and went, "Come." When we got onto the moor, we stopped, and I put the rucksack down, and Peppa sat on her backpack. Ingrid gave us water from her water bottle, and we ate some Velveetas. It was darker than black on the moor. When we switched off the head torches, the sky was huge over us and all pricked with stars, and the more you stared, the more you could see lines and swirls of them. In the middle, it swirled away like water down a plug, with all the stars getting tinier and tinier and fainter in a curling cloud. There were too many. Too many stars and planets in every direction, and it made me feel swirly-headed looking at them. Ingrid stood looking up and held her hands above her head and said, "It is the thing we will never know." I got the same feeling when I saw pictures of big crowds in Russia or China or Malaysia or Brazil on the internet, and how big cities were and how many people there were in the world. Or the feeling on a bus looking at people's houses going by and thinking there were all those people in the world and you would never know them or speak to them or even see them, and they would never know you. It's a funny feeling, like being scared and happy at the same time. Ingrid didn't seem to need a compass, and she just went straight out across the moor, and her feet made a swishing sound going over the heather. In some places it was haggy, and there were troughs full of wet peat, and some places we squelched over sphagnum moss. Peppa kept going well, and it was me who was puffing, following her, and the round beam from her head torch dancing on the heather, or on Ingrid's back. The ground was starting to rise more as we went on, and soon we were climbing again, and Ingrid said, "We go through the stones." A bit further on, we stopped again. We were on a flat, and the torch beam you could see the stones poking up out of the heather. Peppa spun round and lit up the whole circle of them. Most were shorter than me, and some were long and lying on their sides. They were different shapes, some with pointy tops, and some were round, or like triangles, and they were all silver, grey and gold with lichen patches. We rested right in the middle of them, and I got Peppa's head torch and counted 24 going right round us. It was silent, and the dark was pushing in from the sky. Ingrid stood right in the middle with her hands held up, and she was talking to herself again in German with her eyes closed. Then she said, "I ask for blessing on us and keep us safe." Peppa was giggling, and when I shone the head torch on her, she was making the loony sign with her finger by her temple. I said, "Don't, Peppa." Ingrid shouted, "Come," and we went on following her away from the stones and right across the moor top where the ground was mostly flat, but slightly going down, and we had the swish of us on the heather again. We stopped 3 more times for water and Belvita's and a rest. We'd been going hours, and I was wondering where we were, and thought I'd get the map out when I heard Ingrid say, "Here are my woods." And we plunged into a thick wood on a tiny thin path between the trees. It was more oak and hazel and alder than our woods. It was lower too. We'd dropped a good bit since the moor top and the stone circle. Ingrid kept on slow and steady and kept calling back, "Not far now, little girls," and started going down a steep bank on the path, which was a deer path because I could see tracks in the mud. We dropped and dropped, and then we were on a flat bit that ran along the river, and you could hear the water bubbling and swishing through the trees. Peppa complained her trainers were rubbing, and I had to stop and get the first aid kit out of the rucksack and put a fabric plaster over her heel. The wood was lovely and quiet, with just the sound of the little river and the breeze in the trees. We climbed up again, through the trees, on another deer path, and then we came to a kind of step sticking out over the bank, and Ingrid said, "My camp." Her bender was a long way from the edge, and it was bigger than ours, with an arch door and a green cloth hanging down over it. Next to it was a big drying rack made of logs stacked with wood. It had a roof made from spruce branches, and then next to that was a stone dome made of rocks like dry stained dyke. In front of the bender was a fireplace made from rocks, with a tripod over it and a big black kettle hanging, and over the fireplace was a shelter like mine, thatched with spruce. It was a good camp. Peppa ran round looking at everything and shouted, "Sal!" and went over past the bender, and there was a little burn running out of the rocks above, making a waterfall into a wee pool. Behind the camp, the slope went up with big rocks and birch and rowan trees growing out of it, and clumps of dying bluebell leaves and bramble all twined in amongst the rocks. Ingrid was lighting the fire, and she called, "Do you like it?" Peppa said, "It's brilliant. Can you swim in the wee pool?" Ingrid said, "I wash in it and use it for water, and I wash clothes in it. In summer, you can sit in it to stay cool." I got my compass out and sat by Ingrid's fire. The camp faced south, good for sun and shelter from a north wind. I couldn't wait for morning so I could see the view down from it onto the wood towards the river, which you could still hear, tinkling, rushing. Nobody would find you here. Peppa sat by the fire, which was going now, and felt lovely, and lit up the camp around us, and Ingrid said, "I have bread and cheese," and went into her bender. Peppa said, "They won't find us here, Sal." I said, "No. We'll need to see what it's like round here in the morning. But it's better than where we were. Not so close to tracks or roads." Peppa said, "Ingrid's mad." I said, I know, but she's nice and she likes us. Ingrid came back with three plates and big hunks of bread and butter and big pieces of cheese and a jar of pickle. She said, eat. And we did. I was really hungry and the bread was lovely and soft and tasted of smoke. The cheese was sharp and salty and it was lovely with pickle on it. We didn't talk for ages and Peppa ate everything really quick and Ingrid said, do you like an apple? And Peppa said, aye. Ingrid said, you sleep in my bender and I sleep here by the fire to watch. And she jumped up and went into the bender and dragged out a big rush mat and a sleeping bag and a blanket. She laid the mat out along by the fire and got into the sleeping bag and pulled the blanket over her and sat up and said, warm here. Peppa said, Ingrid, how did you find us? How did you find where we were? And Ingrid said, I smelled your fire. I can smell very well. I was up on the moor on my walk and I smelled your fire. And I knew it was going out and getting low, so I came to look. And I saw you, little girl, asleep and the fire going out. I'd been wondering that too. Ingrid pointed to her nose. I can smell things a long way. I can smell if dogs are near, and I can smell cars and sometimes people coming if the wind is right. I can smell rain coming and snow. I have a very good nose. Peppa said, you wouldn't want to smell one of Sal's farts. And Ingrid said, I don't mind farts. We all fart. I fart a lot. So does Sal, Peppa said. I said, did you smell the police car today? And she said, no. Wind was wrong way. Now I need to sleep. She lay down in her sleeping bag and we banked up wood on the fire for her and then went into her bender. She had a platform bed like ours with spruce branches on it. On some big flat rocks she had blankets and quilts and eiderdowns, all neatly folded up, and there were plastic boxes with lids on. She had a hanging rail made of striped poles, and on it were clothes and jackets and dresses, all hanging off hangers like in a wardrobe. One was a Chinese silk jacket with dragons and fir trees and fish all embroidered on it in red and gold thread. She also had loads of pairs of boots, all lined up around the edge of the bender. Some were long riding boots. There were Doc Martens, long blue leather lace-up boots, walking boots, Converse boots, and two pairs of big army boots. Peppa said, huh, she likes her boots. We got out our sleeping bags and blankets and slept on the bed, and it was warm and comfortable. I was so tired I couldn't stay awake to tell Peppa stuff, and she was asleep quick too. Chapter 10. Camp. Things were good with Ingrid. We had food and I hunted in the woods. There were pheasants in our woods, which means there was a shoot somewhere because pheasants are not native to Scotland and are introduced so rich people can pay farmers to shoot them. And they are really easy to shoot. They make loads of noise and they can't stay in camouflage and they sometimes just sit there while you line up the sight on them. Anyone can hit a pheasant. I could probably have got one with the slingshot. I got two on the first day we were at Ingrid's bit. Peppa and Ingrid stayed in the camp and washed some clothes and hung them out to dry. Ingrid started trying to make the rabbit skins Peppa had sewn into a proper hat for her. It was getting colder, but the sun was out in the day and it was frosty at night. Peppa read her book and Ingrid sat by the fire and cut the skins up and measured bits of them round Peppa's head and then started sewing them. While she was doing this, she started teaching Peppa German words, and first she had to teach Peppa all the German swear words. She didn't mind. And even though she was old, she thought it was normal to teach Peppa how to say fuck and wanker and arsehole in German. She said, these are the most interesting words in a language. They are not bad words. They are just words. And Peppa asked her how to say bollocks and balls and cock. When I got back with the pheasants, Peppa told me that Pobanz was German for bogey and Bran German is Bustenhalter, which means bust holder, and cock was Schwanz. I plucked the pheasants and Ingrid said to keep the long tail feathers to make decorations, but she called them decoratives. I gutted them and then we put salt on them and roasted them over the big fire on sticks. Ingrid cooked rice in the big kettle and we had rice and roast pheasant. Afterwards, Ingrid got apples from a box she kept them in, all wrapped in tissue paper, and they were red and sweet. Ingrid said, tomorrow we make you a bender. I need my bender soon, because it will snow in perhaps 2 days' time. The next day, we got up early in the frost and I went off to cut saplings for a bender. We built it just up from Ingrid so the doorway was close to the fire. I used rocks to make 3 plinths and then cut more poles to make a bed. I had to climb up above the camp to find spruce, and while I was doing that, Ingrid and Peppa started lashing the saplings together with paracord. I had to go right up into the woods where I could see the dark green tops of spruce, and I found about 8 big ones amongst the other trees. I cut bundles of branches and lashed them together with 2 ends of paracord and then used it as a handle to drag them back down. We tied the tarp over the top of the frame and then wedged the spruce boughs over it and layers from the top down. I had to go and get branches 2 more because we thatched it right to the ground and then put rocks on the ends of the branches on the ground to keep them down and make it windproof. We made a nice big arch doorway and I could almost stand up inside the new bender. Then Ingrid got us to pile dry leaves all around the outside walls and pile leaves on top for more insulation. It smelled lovely inside of spruce and dry leaves, and we put spruce branches on the bed and all over the floor for carpet. Ingrid made candles out of birch bark, rolled tight, and pine resin she got from Scots pine trees. She also made waterproof bowls and a jug from birch bark with pine resin melted on the joints to make them watertight. She had a big tin of the resin she tapped from the trees, and she warmed it up and showed us how well it burned. She said you could use it for glue and sticking wood together, and it was also an antiseptic, an anti-inflammatory, and it kills bacteria and wounds, so you could use it to make dressings. We made bread with the flour and dried yeast and salt and butter and kneaded it all in a big metal bowl Ingrid had. She showed us what to do and how to leave it for an hour by the fire to rise. Then we kneaded it again with more flour and Ingrid made a big flat ball of dough and we put it in a flat rock and waited another hour. Ingrid lit her oven. It was a big dome made from rocks all put together in a circle and it had a thick flat rock on top. There was a little doorway and Ingrid lit sticks and dry grass inside from an ember. And when it was going, she piled in wood and sticks and it smoked and blazed inside. There was a big flat rock on the floor, and when the fire had burned down and was all charcoal and hot embers, she brushed all the ash to the sides and scooped up the dough on a slate and then pushed it over onto the flat rock. The bread was brown and gold when it came out, and me and Peppa ate it while it was still hot, and Ingrid melted cheese on hers and had cheese on toast. Just when Ingrid said it would, it started snowing. And that night we all sat by the fire with blankets round us while the snow came down and the fire made it look yellow and orange. We had bread and cheese and tea with sugar, but no milk. Peppa told us the story of kidnapped so far. The boy was called Davy, and the story happened in 1751, and his uncle didn't want him to inherit his big house after his father had died, even though he was the one who should have got it. So the uncle tried to kill him. First by tricking him into climbing a big stone staircase with stairs missing over a big drop onto rock in the pitch dark. He was only saved by lightning when he saw where the missing stairs were and realised his uncle was trying to kill him. Then the uncle got him to go to Edinburgh to see a lawyer, but tricked him into getting on a boat and paid the captain to knock Davy out and kidnap him and take him to America where he would be a slave. I said I thought only black people from Africa got taken to America to be slaves, but Peppa said it said in the book that Scottish people got sent too, so that's something I learned. Anyway, on the ship, the captain and the mate and the other bloke are all drunk all the time and torture a boy called Ransom to death, and Davy has to go and serve them food and brandy. And then they go into fog and they run down a small boat. And on the boat is a Highland man called Alan Breck Stewart, who says he's a king and he's carrying loads of money for his chief and he speaks in Scots words. The captain, who is bad, even though Davy thought he was good when he met him in Edinburgh, and the other men, who drink all the time, plan to kill Alan and take all his money, and Davy overhears them making a plot, and so he makes friends with Alan and they have a big fight in a place called the Roundhouse on the ship, and Davy kills a sailor with a gun and they stab Mr. Sean, who was the one who killed the boy, and he dies too. And then Peppa said, "What's a wig?" Ingrid said, "Hair. For your head, if your own hair falls out." And Peppa said, "No, it's W-H-I-G. What is it, Sal?" But I didn't know, and I wished I had Wikipedia. Peppa said, "Anyway, Alan Stewart said wigs have got long faces." And Ingrid and me looked at each other, and we both frowned and shrugged. I said to Peppa, How old is Davy? And Peppa said she thought he was 13 or 14. And I said, he killed someone. And Peppa said, aye. And he did. Defending Alan and the roundhouse. Peppa learned loads of German words from Ingrid while I was out setting snares or trying to shoot pheasants. I went down to the river and set 2 nightlines with worms on hooks on them for eels. I found another warren along from the camp in a clearing where there was a bank and there were rabbit tracks in the snow. I set some snares in the runs there. When I got back to the camp, Peppa had learned German words for bits of her body and kept pointing at her elbow and going, Elbogen, or at her ear and going, Or. And her eyes were called Augen. Her finger was finger and hand was hant with a T sound on the end. Then she pointed at her arse and went, Arsh! We collected all the wood we could too, because the store was running low, and Ingrid said pulling wood and snapping it all made her back hurt, and she was old. The snow made the days really bright, and it clung on the trees and bushes, and at night the sky cleared and it froze. Ingrid finished Peppa's hat and Peppa wore it. It had flaps down over the ears and a peak, and the fur was on the inside, and she said it was cosy. Ingrid was good at sewing and making things, and at night she carved shapes into the wood with her knife while we all sat by the fire. One night after we'd had eels and rice, I said, Ingrid, how old are you? And she smiled and she said, I am 75 years old. Then she told us about her life and how she got to the woods and was surviving. She was born in Berlin in Germany in 1940, which was the second year of the Second World War, and her father was in the German army and her mother was from Latvia, which is near Russia, and they had met when they were both servants in a big house for rich people before the war started. She said they lived in a little flat on the ground floor of a block of flats in a poor part of Berlin, which was all full of Nazis and Nazi flags. Her dad was not a Nazi, but he had had to join the army anyway, and when she was one, he got killed when a plane full of German soldiers crashed going to Poland. Her mum got money off the government then, because her dad had been in the army when he died, but it wasn't enough to buy food and pay their rent, so her mum used to clean offices and big buildings. Ingrid spoke Latvian at home with her mum, and she spoke German when she was out or at nursery school, and at home she called her mum Matti, which is Latvian for mother, and the German is Mutti. The British and Americans started bombing Berlin, and her and her mum had to sit in underground train stations called the U-Bahn while they were bombing. At nursery school, they had to sing songs about Hitler and Germany winning the war, but they never knew that the Russians had already beaten the German army and were invading and coming to Berlin. There were big guns in the park near where she lived that fired at the bombers all night long, and all doorways and windows in her street had sandbags in them. In the U-Bahn, one night, Ingrid's mum met an old man who she made friends with, and he became her boyfriend, and he started coming and sleeping at their flat, and he brought them food, and sometimes he brought wine and brandy for her mum, and he brought Ingrid a doll and ribbons for her hair. His wife was dead, and his 2 sons had been killed fighting the Russians in Russia. The bit they lived in was getting bombed and shelled every day, and they had no food because all the shops were blown up, and there was rubble and collapsed buildings everywhere. Ingrid and her mum stayed in their flat, and her mum went out some days and got bread and rice if she could find it. There was no gas to cook or electricity, and they made fires of wood outside their back door in the yard to cook and keep warm. All the Nazis were running and hiding and trying to get away because the Russian soldiers were coming and they would kill them. The old man, who was Ingrid's mum's boyfriend, stopped coming and bringing them food, and they started to starve, and so did lots of other people who lived near them. Ingrid's mum cried all the time, and they just stayed in their flat all day and listened to the guns and the bombs getting nearer. Then the Russians came in tanks and big long lines of soldiers, and they went into every flat and house and raped the German women. 3 Russian soldiers burst into their little flat and raped Ingrid's mum, while Ingrid was hiding in a cupboard where her mum made her stay all the time once the Russians came. Ingrid's mum got depressed after that, and she just stayed in bed all day, and Ingrid had to go out and find food and water. But the bombing and the explosions all stopped, and the Russians took over the whole area where they lived, and there were soldiers in all the flats and houses, and a big tent in the middle of the street where loads of them stayed. Some of the Russian soldiers were nice, and gave Ingrid bread and cigarettes for her mum. The whole of Berlin got bombed and all the houses and blocks of flat were blown up and there were piles and piles of rubble and stones everywhere and nothing worked and they had to get their water out of pipes in the street and carry it home in buckets. The Russian soldiers told her that Hitler was dead and Russia had won the war and now Berlin was part of Russia and she was going to be Russian, not German. Lots of the German men got taken away and sent to Russia to work in factories, even the old ones. And Ingrid and her mum had to go and work in lines of women moving stones and rocks and rubble out of all the bombed buildings and clearing up all the mess after the fighting had stopped. They got fed in kitchens in the street and had to queue to get bread and soup every day. Ingrid's mum got a new boyfriend who was a Russian officer called Ilya, and he was as big as a giant and he had a beard and wore a big coat with a fur collar. He came to their flat and Ingrid had to stay in their kitchen while him and her mum were in bed together. But he was nice and he brought them food like sausages and chocolate and cake. And he bought Ingrid's mum vodka and sometimes they got drunk and Ingrid went out and played in the streets and in all the